Welcome to Yale Cancer Center Answers with Drs. Francine Foss and Lynn Wilson. Dr. Foss is a professor of medical oncology and dermatology specializing in the treatment of lymphomas. Dr. Wilson is a professor of therapeutic radiology and an expert in the use of radiation to treat lung cancers and cutaneous lymphomas. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can contact the doctors directly. The address is canceranswers@yale.edu and the phone number is 1-888-234-4YCC. This week, Francine welcomes Drs. Susan Main, Leah Ferrucci, and David LaFell. Dr. LaFell is David P. Smith Professor of Dermatology and Professor of Otolaryngology and Plastic Surgery and Section Chief of Dermatologic Surgery and Cutaneous Oncology at Yale School of Medicine. Dr. Ferrucci is a postdoc at the Yale School of Public Health, and Dr. Main is Professor of Epidemiology, Associate Director of Population Sciences, and Division Head of Chronic Disease and Epidemiology. Here's Francine Foss.
So we have a mixed group of people to talk to today, and I just wanted to kind of briefly introduce David, who is a clinician and takes care of patients, primarily patients with skin cancer. And then the other two members of our team are actually in the field of epidemiology, and epidemiology may not be as familiar to our listeners as what we do as medical physicians. So, Susan, could you just brief us a little bit on what an epidemiologist is and what part you play in human diseases and particularly in the context of our patients?
So epidemiologists are oftentimes referred to as disease detectives, and that is our real job is to try to figure out why people get diseases and who might not be getting those diseases and why not. So we do lots of different study designs. We generally interview lots and lots of people about their lifestyles. We track who goes on to get various cancers and things like that, and then we compare our results to people who don't get those cancers. So sometimes we use self-reported data, sometimes we use biochemical samples, but in general, our purpose is to look at what's causing cancer in human populations as a cancer epidemiologist.
And David, as a researcher and a clinician, did you want to just pipe in a little bit about the importance of what Susan and her group does?
I think that it's critical. As a physician taking care of patients, we really function on the retail level, if you will. And we take care of patients one at a time. But it doesn't give us the opportunity to understand the big picture when it comes to, in this case, skin cancer. So what our colleagues in epidemiology do is marshal different strategies to look at whole populations and, as Susan mentioned, to detect exactly certain patterns that can help us better understand the cause of the disease. And if you understand the cause of the disease, you can be better positioned to treat it in a preventative fashion.
So, David, we're here today to talk about this pivotal paper, this tanning study that was done. And I'd like to start off a little bit by having you tell our audience, what are the different types of skin cancer?
Well, there are three main types of skin cancer. Basal cell cancer is the most common, and in fact is the most common cancer in humans worldwide. It's caused by ultraviolet radiation from the sun, practically speaking, in almost all cases. Squamous cell cancer is a cousin of basal cell cancer. It is also a skin cancer caused, in most cases, by ultraviolet radiation from the sun. And then a third type of skin cancer, one that your listeners are familiar with, I'm sure, is melanoma. And melanoma, in many cases, is caused by the sun, but not in all cases. Today, we're going to be talking about basal cell cancer.
So you mentioned a couple of things that are risk factors for developing skin cancer. You mentioned the ultraviolet light exposure. Are there other risk factors as well that our audience should be aware of?
There are indeed. Light-colored hair, gray, green, or blue eye color, family history of skin cancer, occupational history, and these are things that Leah and Susan can talk more about because they played a critical role in the research that's being discussed. I think that in general, people that tend to burn in the sun before they tan are at greatest risk.
Susan, did you want to elaborate at all on any of those risk factors and some of the work that you've done?
I guess the only thing I'd say is it is true that people who have the fairest skin are at the greatest risk. But in our study that we'll be talking about shortly, we had people without fair skin who were still getting basal cell carcinomas. So it's certainly true that they are at higher risk, but I don't think people should be misled into thinking that because they have skin that tans that they don't get basal cell carcinoma, because that was not the case in our study.
And what about our African-American and other dark-skinned population? Are they at the same kind of risk?
Because they have darker skin, they are at much, much, much lower risk for skin cancer in general. But having said that, we even had a couple of individuals in our study who were African-American who had basal cell carcinoma. Now, these people obviously had other genetic backgrounds. They weren't 100% African-American, but it still can happen. And that's our message, is people shouldn't necessarily feel that they're not at risk because they have darker skin.
I think Susan makes a very important point. Here in Connecticut, there are many people that are of Mediterranean ancestry. And they think that if they have Italian background or other darker-skinned, olive-skinned background, they get a free pass. We know from our clinical experience that that's not the case at all, that you can get enough ultraviolet exposure from the sun or from artificial sources to overcome any built-in protection your skin might provide.
Are there any specific genetic factors, David, that would predispose patients?
Well, in fact, there are. Back in 1996, a team led by Alan Bale here at Yale discovered the patch gene. And the patch gene was the first gene identified as a cause of skin cancer.
So how does a patient know whether they have this gene, and is this something we should be screening for?
Studies that we did subsequently showed that about 70% of the population that has basal cell cancer has a mutation in that gene. So to a certain degree, this gene is more affected by, more a marker really for environmental impact, which we understand quite well. And it's not really one of the genes that we would test for.
So many, many people in the audience, and I'm sure, you know, a lot of people that you see have these various skin lesions. And how does a patient know if they have a skin cancer? When should they be worried? And how do you make the diagnosis?
Well, skin cancer can present in many different ways, but the classic appearance is of a small bump that has a pearly quality to it with blood vessels running through it. I say that's a classic appearance, that's a textbook appearance, but then you can ask me how many times do we actually see the textbook appearance. Not as often as you see a growth that bleeds, heals up, and comes back, and that's probably the way in which patients most frequently identify their skin cancer, as a sore that doesn't heal.
And the diagnosis is made by a skin biopsy?
The diagnosis can only be made by a biopsy, which is a simple office procedure performed under local anesthetic.
And are most of the biopsies that are done in the dermatologist's office, or would a patient expect to get a biopsy, say, by a primary care doctor or by another type of a physician?
Statistically, the vast majority of skin cancers in this country are biopsied by dermatologists. A smaller percent increasingly are biopsied by primary care physicians and healthcare providers. And as long as the clinical diagnosis is correct, in other words, as long as their decision to make a biopsy is warranted based on what they see on the patient, the procedure is simple and of very low risk.
So once a patient has a biopsy, what is the next step?
Well, let's, for example, say that the biopsy proves that it's a basal cell cancer. There are any number of treatments that can be performed to get an effective cure of the lesion. And they range from a simple scraping and burning in the dermatologist's office to removal by excision to a specialized technique called the Mohs surgery technique, which is reserved for facial lesions and complicated lesions.
Can you tell us a little bit about what actually led up to your current research in this area?
So we got interested in this after talking to some of our dermatologists. And in terms of trends, cancer trends, we track melanoma trends nationally, and we've seen this increase in melanoma nationally, especially in young people and especially in young women. And in speaking to our dermatologic colleagues like Dr. LaFell, they were also reporting increases in basal cell carcinomas occurring in their practices, especially in young women. Whereas in the past, basal cell carcinomas really were not that common in young people. They were seeing more and more cases today. So along with the trends in melanoma, we started to wonder why these cancers may be going up. When you see rapid changes in incidence of a cancer, you start thinking there must be some change in an environmental factor. Genetic factors don't change that rapidly. So something environmental had to be changing. As Dr. LaFell indicated, we know that ultraviolet light, UV light, is the primary cause of skin cancer, so that led us to wonder what might be changing in terms of UV exposures. We know that indoor tanning has become much more common in recent years, so we were seeing parallel increases in use of indoor tanning, and we were seeing increases in basal cell carcinoma. So we decided to ask the question, are the people who are getting these skin cancers at younger ages the same people who are engaging in indoor tanning? So that's what really got us interested in this particular project.
And David, can you talk a little bit about this whole issue of indoor tanning? You probably have a lot of patients who you've told not to do this. Is this a fairly common practice nowadays? And are there certain groups of patients that are at higher risk? I think you've mentioned, you know, the lighter skinned patients.
Yeah, well, it's hard to know what the denominator is because the patients that I see are the ones that have had an unhappy outcome from their tanning parlor use. But my observation and that of my colleagues started, I don't know, probably 7-8 years ago. We were starting to see more and more women, primarily in their 20s, which was unheard of when I was in medical school, or 20 years ago, let's say. And it was clear that something was happening. And what was notable is the reaction that these patients had. You would think that a 23-year-old with a basal cell cancer on their face would be especially concerned, but almost to a person, they would say, I know I did this to myself. And there was a recognition, at least at that point, that using tanning parlors was unsafe, and here we now saw the results of that activity.
So just to clarify, the amount of sun and ultraviolet exposure that you get in the tanning booth, say, compared to if you're out all summer on a boat, you know, year after year, for instance, or you're one of these beach lovers, you know, is the tanning booth really more dangerous than what you would normally be exposed to?
Well, it's a little bit hard to determine, but some studies have looked at the emission spectrum, the UV spectrum that tanning beds emit. And so tanning beds use this UV radiation to produce a tan. UVA and UVB are the primary types of UV radiation that reach us from the sun. And in tanning beds, we see both of those types of UV. UV radiation as a whole is a known human carcinogen as classified by the World Health Organization. And when we look at the UV emission from many tanning devices, it's often equivalent or exceeds that of the midday sun in a country in southern Europe, such as Italy or Greece. So it is equivalent to sort of that strong midday sun, which you wouldn't have that much exposure to. And then when we look at the type of UV that's within the tanning beds, we see that the UV intensity for UVA of tanning beds is almost 10 to 15 times higher than that of the midday sun. So when the World Health Organization really reviewed indoor tanning, they said that this type of repeated exposure to high doses of UVA was really a new phenomenon, and so that may be in part why we see this different type of risk with indoor tanning.
So do we know if there's any so-called like safe dose of tanning in these tanning booths?
So I think we can talk about the results of our study and kind of highlight there. But I would say with regard to melanoma, that's been looked at. And what they find is ever indoor tanning increases the risk of melanoma. And as we'll talk about when we get to the results of our study, ever indoor tanning also significantly increases your risk of basal cell carcinomas. So based upon that, I wouldn't say that there is necessarily a safe dose.
It's important to recognize that theories of cancer historically included the belief that it took 30 years or so for a cancer to develop once you initiated the cancer with one of the carcinogens or environmental factors. But here we're seeing people that were age 15, 16, 17 coming in at age 23, 24 with skin cancers. So it also has huge implications for our understanding of the biology of carcinogenesis or the causing of cancer. And Susan and Leah's work has really allowed us to focus on an important aspect of the age relationship.
So David, I'd like to talk a little bit more about that study specifically when we come back, but we need to break now for a short medical minute.
The American Cancer Society estimates that the lifetime risk of developing colorectal cancer is about 1 in 20, and that risk is slightly lower in women than in men. Early detection is the key. When detected early, colorectal cancer is easily treated and highly curable. Men and women over the age of 50 should have regular colonoscopies to screen for this disease. Each day, more patients are surviving the disease due to increased access to advanced therapies and specialized care. New treatment options and surgical techniques are giving colorectal cancer survivors more hope than they ever had before. Clinical trials are currently underway at federally designated comprehensive cancer centers, like the one at Yale, to test innovative new treatments for colorectal cancer. New options include a Chinese herbal medicine being used in combination with chemotherapy to reduce side effects of treatment and help cancer drugs work more effectively. This has been a Medical Minute, and more information is available at yalecancercenter.org. You're listening to the WNPR Health Forum on the Connecticut Public Broadcasting Network.
Welcome back to Yale Cancer Center Answers. This is Dr. Francine Foss, and I'm joined today by my panel of guests, Dr. Susan Main, Leah Ferrucci, and Dr. David LaFell. And we're here discussing the issue of tanning and the risks of developing skin cancer from tanning. So could you open up the discussion, Susan, by talking to us in more detail about the particular study that you did and what the results of that study were?
So for our study, we did what's called a case control study. And in a case control study, what we do is we first interview people who have been diagnosed with a particular disease. In this case, it was skin cancer before the age of 40. And we asked them about many different lifestyle factors and exposures. For this particular study, obviously, we asked a lot of questions about indoor tanning and outdoor tanning and sunbathing and things like that. At the same time, we also interview a group of what we call control subjects. And these are people who are selected to match the cases on age and gender to represent similar age and gender distribution. But these are people who are also under the age of 40 and who have not developed the disease that you're interested in this case, haven't developed skin cancer. And so they're used as a comparison group. And we wanted to find out, we know that tanning is common in young people, and we wanted to find out if our cases who had developed skin cancer had engaged in tanning more frequently than our controls. So these types of epidemiologic studies are typically large studies. For this study, we interviewed a total of 376 people who had early onset skin cancer, basal cell carcinoma before the age of 40, and we interviewed 390 control subjects. And these were all young people, they were all Connecticut residents. We did in-home interviews. It took approximately an hour or so to ask them all the questions that we needed in order to collect the data for this study. And we tried to interview every person that we could find who was diagnosed with basal cell carcinoma under the age of 40 in Connecticut. And it turned out that 70% of our cases were females. And this is, again, what our clinicians had been noting was this excess of these cancers occurring in young women, and that's what we found in our study, and 70% of the cases that we interviewed were young women. So in terms of what we found, the primary exposure we were really interested in studying in this particular project was indoor tanning. And beginning with ever indoor tanning, what we observed is that people who ever tanned indoors had a statistically significant about 70% increased risk of developing basal cell carcinoma. So that was a fairly striking risk. Previous studies that had looked at indoor tanning tended to focus in on older populations who really didn't tan much indoors. But in a younger population where you have a much higher prevalence of exposure, that was a fairly dramatic risk estimate, 70% statistically significant increase in risk of skin cancer.
Leah, can you comment on what you think is going on with the younger people? Do you think that there's an increased risk if you're younger and exposed to ultraviolet light as opposed to, say, if you're older?
There is some evidence to suggest that an earlier age at initiation of this intense UV exposure may increase your risk, but it hasn't been consistent throughout. And it was a little bit hard for us to determine that in our study population because most of our indoor tanners had done so at a very early age. So we didn't have much of a range to really be able to examine that much. But age could very well be an important risk factor in terms of the initiation of the exposure.
And do you know what the average age when people started tanning, when these women started tanning?
So in our population, 95% of indoor tanners started tanning before the age of 25, and 50% had reported their first use of indoor tanning at age 17 or under.
And do you know how long the average time was that they went to the tanning booth? Was it months or years?
Well, we actually asked several different questions about that. So we asked the frequency, the number of sessions that they had. We also asked about hours, and we asked about the number of years that they had used. I'm not sure that I have the median right in front of me.
I think sessions is one way to capture the exposures. And we had people reporting anywhere from one session that they'd been one time in their life up to people reporting they'd been 2,500 times. So because this was a population under the age of 40, we had some people who were in their later 30s, began tanning in their teens, and had been tanning for 20 years. That was obviously the extreme, but we did have people with that much exposure. And again, on the converse, we had people with very limited exposure, including people who developed cancer in our study.
In your control group, I'm wondering, if you asked the question as to whether folks use sunscreen and whether that entered into your analysis at all.
We did ask about sunscreen and also specifically sunscreen on the particular body site where the individuals had had the lesion. So we did, we were able to control for sunscreen use in this analysis, but it really wasn't the focus of this particular project as of yet, but we will be looking at those data a bit more in the future.
And I think that's because when people are engaging in indoor tanning, they're trying to produce a tan, so they're not applying sunscreen before indoor tanning. It's certainly relevant for outdoor UV, and we do have all the data collected on whether they use sunscreen and how much outdoor UV they were getting.
And David, do you notice any change in the distribution of these basal cell cancers in these folks that are going to the tanning booth? I mean, obviously, you would suspect in older people, they're more on the face and the hands, which get more sunlight.
Right. Well, I think what's interesting is a large number are not on the head and neck, where the majority of skin cancers normally occur, which is an argument for an artificial induction or creation of the skin cancers. The ones that we see at Yale generally are patients who've had skin cancers on the face because they're being referred for specialized treatment. But I think that one of the important points to remember for further on in the discussion is that 50% figure of people age 17 and younger getting exposure in tanning parlors.
And I can follow up a little bit on that. We actually looked at, we had pathology reports, so we looked to see where these tumors were developing in all of the study subjects in our project. And what we observed was a really pretty dramatic number that were occurring in the trunk and the extremities, especially in the trunk area. And we looked at the relationship between indoor tanning and those cancers. It was much stronger than what we observed between basal cell carcinomas that were occurring on the face. So our data did suggest that indoor tanning was a stronger risk factor for tumors that were occurring on the trunk, which I think really adds credibility to the findings because that's what we would expect to see, and in fact, that's what we observed.
And David, those skin cancers that occurred, say, like on the back and on the trunk, might not be as easy for a person to pick up, I would imagine.
Well, there's that. They're also, more often than not, what we call superficial basal cell cancer and can be mistaken for a rash or a patch of eczema or something like that. That's just the way it appears. And there are other types of basal cell cancers that have other appearances. I think that the distribution on the trunk and extremities, as Susan suggests, is very, very telling. It internally confirms the validity of the study, but it also tells us where we have to focus our educational efforts in terms of this population.
So there's obviously huge public health impact from this study, and Susan, I wondered if you wanted to discuss that and tell us what's next.
So in terms of what's next, I think our findings really add to the evidence that already was out there linking indoor tanning to melanoma. But the literature just wasn't that consistent for basal cell carcinoma, largely because, as I mentioned previously, studies had focused in on people who were older. When we focus in on young people, our data were quite telling in terms of linking indoor tanning with this risk. So from public health point of view, as Leah indicated, the average age that our subjects engaged in indoor tanning was before the age of 17 or younger. So people are starting this behavior very young. We know it's carcinogenic, and our study is linked it to basal cell carcinoma. It's also been linked to melanoma. So many organizations, including the World Health Organization, the American Cancer Society, other organizations have basically said, you know, this is carcinogenic. We need to stop this behavior. Some places have taken the step of banning indoor tanning in young people. In the United States, California was the first one to do that, just starting January of this year. But note that in many other countries, indoor tanning is banned in young people. For example, England has taken that stand. Brazil has banned indoor tanning completely. So the United States stands a little bit behind some of these other countries in terms of legislation for indoor tanning.
David, can you talk about what is being done within the dermatologic community to address this issue?
Well, over the past several years in Connecticut, a variety of interested parties have pushed for legislation to at least get parental consent for these children, and I emphasize the word children, to use tanning parlors. Susan mentioned California went all the way and banned it. I think that in Connecticut, our experience has been that every time legislation arises that reflects good common sense, good public health measures, there are political interests that block it. I can't understand why anyone would be opposed to legal legislative measures that protect the health of our children. I don't imagine these groups would be the same ones to suggest that we should be able to sell cigarettes to 16-year-olds. But it's a political reality. This February, it's a short term in the State House, but I believe an effort is being made once again to put forward legislation to require parental consent for the use of tanning parlors in people 17 and younger.
It is interesting, and I have a high school student taking health class, and it is interesting that they learn about alcohol and they learn about smoking, but they really don't learn about this.
I think you're right, and I think that what we're seeing is the time from the insult, so to speak, the exposure to the ultraviolet radiation in the tanning parlor, to the time you actually develop the disease is really quite short, and its impact can be significant. So this is a chance for the people of Connecticut to do the right thing, to come together, to pass a simple law that will make sure that children who aren't always in the best position to make decisions about their health have assistance and protection from doing things that Susan and her team and others have proven is harmful and dangerous.
If somebody in the audience wanted to get involved in this cause, is there an advocacy group that you would recommend, or is there a website that they could go to get more information about this?
Well, I think the legislation is being handled on a state-by-state and nation-by-nation basis. So, I mean, I would look to their local environment and see what's happening there. I think many, many places in Canada are now very, very active at trying to introduce legislation for indoor tanning. As I said, it's regulated currently at a state-by-state level. There's a lot of good information on the web that people could access, and there's also a lot of bad information on the web and some of the myths of indoor tanning. And in response to our study, I will say that some of the myths continue to be put forth largely by the Indoor Tanning Association, and I think we should try to correct a few of those. One that's been out there that I've heard in response to our study is, well, it's okay to do indoor tanning as long as you don't burn. And in our study, we interviewed people and asked them whether they did burn from indoor tanning. And while many people did get burned from indoor tanning, many people did not. And what we found is even in the absence of burning, indoor tanning was associated with a significant increase in the risk of skin cancer. So our data clearly argue against that that has been put forth by the Indoor Tanning Association. The other thing that I've heard in response to our study is that, well, this must be uncontrolled home tanning where people are not taking care, they're getting burned in their basements. That is not what our data indicate. We asked people where they engaged in indoor tanning, and the vast, vast majority of it was done in commercial tanning facilities. And so the risk that we're seeing is reflecting what's happening in these young people in commercial tanning facilities, and that's a myth that I think we need to correct.
Dr. Susan Main is Professor of Epidemiology, Associate Director of Population Sciences, and Division Head of Chronic Disease and Epidemiology at Yale Cancer Center. Dr. Leah Ferrucci is a postdoc at the Yale School of Public Health, and Dr. David LaFell is David P. Smith Professor of Dermatology and Professor of Otolaryngology and Plastic Surgery and Section Chief of Dermatologic Surgery and Cutaneous Oncology at Yale School of Medicine. If you have questions or would like to add your comments, visit yalecancercenter.org, where you can also get the podcast and find written transcripts of past programs. You're listening to the WNPR Health Forum on the Connecticut Public Broadcasting Network.